From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Marking his first public appearance since he left the White House, former President Donald Trump gave a lengthy, grievance-filled speech at this year's Conservative Political Action Conference, where he cemented his hold over the Republican Party. The incendiary talk was similar to the one Trump gave in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, before a mob of his supporters broke into the Capitol with the intent of harming lawmakers. Trump repeated the lie that he won the 2020 election and attacked the U.S. Supreme Court for refusing to overturn the election in his favor. He also listed by name every Republican lawmaker that opposed him, saying ominously, "Get rid of them all." My guest is Parker Malloy, editor at large for Media Matters. Welcome to the program, Parker.
For having me.
So you had written even before this year's CPAC event, that journalists ought to be very careful about how we cover the conference. Why? What was the fear that you had?
Sure. Well, one of the things I worried about going into CPAC was that journalists have a tendency to live tweet these events or air them live, as a lot of Trump's speeches had been while he was president. And going into it, I think it was pretty obvious that a big theme was going to be this lie about the election being stolen from them. And the last thing you want to do is to just amplify that sort of message, because we've seen what that does, where you now have just, I think it's something like 60% or more of Republicans who believe that the election was illegitimate. And that's because a lot of these messages have just been repeated over and over. So you don't want to add to that. You don't want to add to disinformation.
It is quite remarkable the extent to which Republicans, rank and file Republicans believe imminently, and easily provable lies, and most of it coming straight from Trump. It's interesting that the conference itself was labeled this year. Their slogan was uncancelled, because of course, right-wing figures, are tired of being called out for racism or sexism or homophobia, etc., transphobia. They don't like being held accountable. So they labeled it uncancelled, which was the word that Trump spoke below. And yet they ended up having to cancel one of their speakers, right? A very openly anti-Semitic figure, a social media figure named Young Pharaoh.
Yes. And that was something that came out of our reporting at Media Matters, which was just this activist's long history of anti-Semitic speech, for the most part. And then once our article went up talking about that, he doubled down on it. He said, "Of course I said those things." And he tried to challenge, he wanted to debate a rabbi, I think I saw him post on Twitter, before his account just disappeared. So it was interesting to see that happen. But a similar thing happened before the Republican National Convention last summer, where you had someone who was slated to speak. It turned out that she was a believer in a lot of the QAnon sort of conspiracy theories. So it felt like it was repeating itself a little bit there. But yeah, there's some dissonance between the America uncancelled, cancel culture is bad, and oh no, we need to distance ourselves from this particular speaker, which obviously I think it was a good idea for them to distance themselves from that speaker, but it does seem a little hypocritical on their part.
I mean, the fact that the speaker was invited to begin with, should say something about where the conservative movement is today. And clearly they do draw the line at overt anti-Semitism, but not so overt anti-Semitism is fine. For example, most Republican lawmakers continue to support Marjorie Taylor Greene, who had spread conspiracies about Jewish space lasers being responsible for setting wildfires in California. So Republicans will draw a line, just not in the same place that the rest of America will. Their line appears to have a far, far higher tolerance, it seems, for xenophobia and bigotry.
Yeah, yeah. And that I think that that's, yeah, it everyone has a line, and it depends on what the value of the person is to them. I mean, in Marjorie Taylor Greene's position, she's a lawmaker, she's an elected official, and she obviously has a following and people who like her. In the case of someone like Young Pharaoh, he was just kind of someone that no one really knew about. And I'm sure he has, you know, he had a following online large enough to get him invited to this, but he wasn't some sort of core member of the conservative movement to the point where they felt like they needed to come to his defense. You know, and that's something that similarly we sort of saw that happen last year when it came to when it was Fox News. Fox News distanced themselves from some of their commentators, Diamond and Silk, who had a show on Fox Nation. Fox News kind of severed ties with them over some of their conspiracy theories that they were promoting. But if you really look at what they were saying on their show versus what you would see on shows by Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and their, pretty much their entire primetime lineup, there wasn't a whole lot of difference there. It was just that one of those groups was made up of people who are a core part of the Fox brand. And I think you saw something sort of like that happen at CPAC.
And by the way, the stage of the main stage of CPAC very strongly resembled a Nazi symbol. This didn't get very widespread coverage, although a couple of the main papers did cover it. You know, couldn't confirm whether this was done deliberately or just a pure coincidence. But the symbol is apparently gaining popularity among the radical neo-Nazi right, and it's called the Odal rune. It's a kind of symbol that was worn on the lapels of SS. As soldiers in Nazi Germany, and the Hyatt Regency, the Hyatt Hotel, which hosted the CPAC conferences, has now had to distance itself from that symbol, from the conference itself. I mean, if conservatives were trying to distance themselves from anti-Semitism, which they claim they're against, it seemed like they failed pretty miserably.
Well, in the case of that particular that symbol, I obviously don't have any particular insight as to what the motivations were behind it or anything like that. And I saw a lot of people who work in the disinformation research space basically saying, yes, it does look like that, but just listen to the stuff that they're saying on stage, right? Because you don't have to necessarily look for symbolism in everything when they are being pretty overt in their messaging from the stage.
Right. And I mean, but CPAC could have apologized and said, oh, it was totally unintentional. In fact, it sort of dismissed the claim. The Hyatt called it abhorrent. You know, this was covered by the Washington Post. I mean, you would have thought that, imagine if it was a Democratic conference and it happened to have such a symbol. There would have been an outcry on Fox News, right? Even if it was done purely coincidentally or unintentionally.
Yeah, and I think that sort of speaks to some of the differences between conservative media and progressive, liberal, or mainstream media, even. And it's that conservative media will take something like that and will really hammer home that message over and over and over until someone will say, you know what, that was a mistake. Sorry, our bad. We didn't catch it. It was totally a coincidence. And there's this sort of reality denial aspect of conservative media and the conservative movement that kind of focuses on this idea where it's, you know, just never apologize, don't cave to the mob is kind of their whole sort of message. So they'll say, well, why, you're just seeing things that aren't there. And you kind of make it seem like it's your problem for noticing these things as opposed to their problem for accidentally, even if it was accidentally, embracing those. But I do caution against looking for symbolism in so many of these things, because that's kind of one of the core aspects of the QAnon movement on the right, is finding symbols everywhere where they might not exist. So while I think it's fair to note this,
Let's talk about Trump's speech. He just comes right out and says it. He doesn't hold back. The speech that I mentioned had some similarities with his January 6th speech. If anybody thought that Trump was cowed by the Capitol riot, by the fact that he was impeached by the House for inciting insurrection through, you know, encouraging his mob to show up on January 6th, if anybody thought that he was in any way cowed, the speech that he gave this past weekend at CPAC seems to suggest that he, in typical Trump fashion, dug in his heels. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's exactly what I expected it would be. And it got exactly the response I thought it would get in conservative media. They loved it. They were cheering it on. They were amplifying the same messages. And there's a lot of overlap that you'll see between conservative media, you know, Fox News, Breitbart, that sort of stuff, Newsmax, and what you'll see with some of these conservative public figures like Trump, where it's just hammering home this idea that they are victims, that they are being treated unfairly, that something was taken from them. And it really plays into this whole idea where they start talking about things like cancel culture and how everything is unfair. And they don't seem to see the irony in the fact that they're arguing that the left is always offended by everything while also being offended by everything themselves, where they will portray themselves as victims while decrying the perpetual victimhood of the left. And it seems like it's just filled with quite a bit of cognitive dissonance, but it's what their brand stands for, I guess, at this moment.
The biggest sort of cognitive dissonance seems to be the sense that they believe the election was stolen. They believe that it was important to try to overturn the election so that Trump would win. But then all of those violent Trump flag waving, MAGA hat wearing rioters who showed up at the Capitol were, we are supposed to believe, magically transformed into Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Even though, of course, it was justifiable for Trump to be forced to remain, you know, for them to try to force Trump to remain president. I mean, that lie is also something that several, even lawmakers in the Republican Party seems to be perpetuating, right? They seem to be spreading this completely fact-free assertion that it was all Antifa in disguise, trying to foment a race war or insurrection to make the MAGA people look bad. I mean, I wonder why those who are facing charges aren't speaking out, saying, no, it wasn't Antifa, it really was us.
Well, and there are stories that are coming out where people who were directly involved in these in the insurrection are saying, no, it was Trump supporters, it was us, we're proud of what we did, that sort of thing. But one thing I noticed right after the January 6th attack was that conservative media was cycling through various messages looking for something that would work. Do they defend it? Do they say it wasn't them or it wasn't that bad? And a lot of them sort of landed on that it wasn't us, it was Antifa kind of argument. And it's obviously false, just like it's obviously false that the election was stolen from Trump. And I think that one thing that's important to sort of remember in all of this is that it's not so much a matter of whether or not they actually believe the election was stolen, but that they can use it to get their base really energized, moving forward to have something to fight against. And I know that there's a lot of a feeling that because people on the left were critical of Russian interference in the 2016 election, there's some sort of sense that their grievances about the 2020 election should be taken just as seriously. And what we're seeing in states right now is that there are a lot of Republican legislatures that are trying to enact new laws when it comes to voting. And I think that that's kind of been a long-term conservative media project, that they've been pushing out that idea that voting fraud is rampant, and that that if something isn't done, then their vote won't count, while implementing these laws that would essentially suppress the vote and presumably help them.
And on that issue of voting, which of course right now, as you and I are speaking, the Supreme Court is looking at whether or not states should be allowed to encroach on the voting rights of minorities. Republican-controlled state legislatures around the country are passing laws to make it harder for Democrats to vote. What was said at CPAC, as far as you know, around voting and elections? Because, of course, first they maintain that Trump won, but then in calling attention to what they say are voting problems, they're implying that Trump lost and they need to make sure that he might win in the future.
Well, one thing they did was they had a 7-part series about called Protecting Elections. And that was the basis of it was this idea that there was rampant fraud, that there were ballots being counted that shouldn't have been counted, that if you took everything and if every law was followed, if every regulation was in place, then Trump would have won. That's sort of their whole argument. So they say, had we had these laws in place, had we had more restrictions on voting, if we didn't accept mail-in ballots, if we didn't have such long early voting, spaces or drop box for ballots, then maybe Trump would have won, because they view a lot of these things as illegitimate. Voting by mail, there's this on the right, there's a very strong feeling that votes by mail, even though many people on the right vote by mail, that votes by mail are in specifically and uniquely susceptible to fraud. Which, I mean, if that's the case, then these cases of fraud should show up, but they're really not.
Was there any space at CPAC for the anti-Trump Republican faction, which, isn't insignificant? There are Republicans like Mitt Romney or Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger who are speaking out, and of course who are catching a lot of flack. And as I mentioned, Trump literally listed the name of every Republican that opposed him and said, get rid of them all. I mean, how ominous to say this, especially to a crowd that is likely to be armed, right? They probably are card-carrying NRA members. Get rid of them all, is what he said. So did this year's CPAC essentially push out all the anti-Trump criticism, or was there a small space for it as far as you know?
From what I was able to watch, which was a lot, there really didn't seem to be much room for anti-Trump dissent. There wasn't really much room for an idea that maybe the conservative movement should look beyond Trump or beyond the Trump family. The message that was hammered home pretty heavily was that Trump is the president of the Republican Party, whether that means that he will run again, or whether that means that he will act as a sort of kingmaker for future candidates. But it was very interestingly and oddly pro-Trump, because even in past years, there have always been, one or two people who would say something that wasn't very pro-Trump, even when he was president. So I think it was interesting to see that sort of total shift to he is the Republican Party. There was that bizarre statue, that bizarre gold statue that was going around.
The Trump statue wearing the American flag shorts and flip-flops, carrying looks like
a
some
magic
kind of
wand or something.
Yeah, a scepter or a wand, a little star-shaped wand. Oh my gosh. Wow. What was that?
apparently someone made that and started making it 5 or 6 months ago and brought it to CPAC and people were taking pictures with it, but it was odd to see the first day of CPAC, someone rolling down a literal golden idol of Trump. But I think maybe that says a bit about the conservative movement kind of as a whole, where it stands right now, just generally. But it was odd, and it's I don't know what that really means for the future.
What did you learn from Trump's speech at CPAC about his intention to remain on the political scene? He said, I might just beat them a third time, implying, of course, that he beat Democrats in 2020 and was getting ready to run in 2024. There was all this talk before CPAC that Trump was meeting with high-level Republicans at Mar-a-Lago, considering the formation of a third party, but then he basically came out and said that that was not his intention anymore. Basically, he wants to take over the Republican Party. As far as you can tell, is Trump likely to run again?
I mean, I'm not quite sure, but what one thing I did notice was that a lot of those sort of a lot of that sort of strategy, maybe I'll start my own party kind of idea, that's something that came up during the 2016 Republican primary, where Trump kind of floated this idea of maybe he would run third party if he didn't win the nomination. And that was, kind of adds this sort of drama to the nominating process. So sometimes I watch and I see things like that, and I just think that it feels like a rerun. And that's sort of what the, will Trump start a third party or won't he, which I think that's something that many Democrats would probably be okay with if he were to do that, because it would split the right. But I think that there is a strong sense in conservative media that Trump is the future of that party. And I think that if Fox News, Newsmax, One American News Network, if they all want to push that message for the next few years, it's going to be hard to say no to him if that's something that he wants, because they will have his back. They very clearly show more loyalty to him than to the Republican Party generally. They're all obviously right-leaning and some far right media outlets, but I think that it's going to be a big push for him to run again. And one thing that I noticed in the CPAC speech was that he was echoing a lot of recent culture war kind of stuff that came up with especially with transgender people in sports. That was something that came
right
up during Trump's speech, which was interesting because while in office, he had all sorts of policies that were absolutely devastating for LGBT people and especially trans people, but he never really addressed it as straight on as he did in his speech at CPAC, which was interesting. It was more Trump the social commentator than Trump the
candidate.
Politician,
yeah.
Because that was something that in 2016, Ted Cruz tried to take the that sort of line against him as sort of a last ditch effort to beat Trump in the primary.
And of course, now Cruz is, if you can't beat him, join him. And he spoke
much
at CPAC too. But these comments, these transphobic comments that Trump made came on the heels of Senator Rand Paul making anti-trans comments at a recent hearing for, I believe it was Assistant Health Secretary, and also Marjorie Taylor Greene speaking against the Equality Act. So very, very, this seems to be the sort of new line, or one of the new lines of attack that the modern pro-Trump Republican Party appears to be taking on, which of course is extremely dangerous. And then finally, I want to ask you this, Parker. I, as a journalist, honestly was just reluctant to even cover the CPAC speech after he left office. It just felt like such a relief. I mean, many of us journalists have had like some sort of trauma from 4 years of covering this relentless news cycle and the crazy things that have emerged from Trump. And the temptation was to sort of ignore it, but we ignore it at our peril, right? Because unfortunately, whether we like it or not, Trump and his mark on the Republican Party and his mark on the American body politic is pretty strong still. And if we don't cover it, we could be caught off guard in the future again, like we were in 2016.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that there's that fine line, which has been something that I've been giving a lot of thought lately, is how do you cover a former president like Donald Trump, who is very clearly still wanting to be involved in politics, whether it's as a candidate or as a kingmaker. But you can't report on his every word about policy, for instance. It can't be, well, Biden did this, and then Trump made a comment, which this would be easier for him if he still had a Twitter account, making a comment where, you know, then you go, well, but then Trump said this, as the opposite, kind of like a response to a State of the Union address sort of situation, where Trump is treated as a president temporarily out of power sort of thing. But I think when it comes to CPAC and when it comes to other speeches that he makes or newsworthy events that he does, I think what's important is his speeches don't need to be aired live. They should still be covered. If he says something newsworthy, I think it's worth reporting. During CPAC, for instance, if someone were to just be covering that, I think the line to come out of that would be that he called out the Republicans who voted to impeach him. And I think that would be how one could responsibly cover his speech without having to just rehash his lies about the election.
And multiply the reach that he has already.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Parker, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. What's the best website for Media Matters?
Sure. It's mediamatters.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My guest has been Parker Molloy, editor-at-large for Media Matters. We've been discussing Trump's CPAC speech. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.